I've hit the button.
We're recording. Yay! After much absence, this is the Read Comics Podcast.
It wasn't that much absence.
Well, it was before New Year's.
Oh, really?
It was the Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Happy New Year, everybody. This is Florence.
And Jason.
And Marty.
And Mike is waving.
And Mike, I'm here. Hi.
Yeah.
Say hi, Susie.
And Susie via Skype. We may or may not be able to hear Susie. She's kind of...
Can you, like, angle the phone or the computer at all? Because I know that was causing problems last time.
No, the sound is fine. It's just that you cut out every once in a while. You know, it's Skype. We'll make do. You might have to repeat yourself once or twice.
Okay.
What I was going to say is, before we started, I was going to say something, and now I'm going to just say it. We should really just not have a podcast and tell everyone to go listen to the DVD of Dr. Horrible, the commentary, because it was awesome. Do you have it yet, Susie?
I don't have it yet because I am trying not to spend any more money on my credit cards until I pay off what I've got on them right now.
No,
was the Dr. Horrible DVD? It couldn't have been that much. If it was a normal price DVD, it was
how much was it?
Off.
I don't know, like $20.
Oh.
Yeah, something.
Oh.
Worth every penny.
You can get the episodes online for $1.99.
Well, Susie already has it,
yeah.
So do we.
It's,
actually,
it's the commentary and the all that.
I don't fully intend to buy it. I just am waiting.
Yep.
When's your birthday?
In September.
Oh, that's a long wait.
I will get it.
And you'll want other things before then.
Yeah.
Well, tonight, I don't know if we have a topic or anything, or if we're just going to talk about what we're reading and stuff, but I have a couple of things. Specifically, I just wrote down some notes.
Sorry, that's not on our agenda.
To talk about.
Our agenda includes absolutely nothing.
The agenda includes not letting Jason approach his agenda.
Oh, I see. All right.
That's Mike's agenda. It's not my agenda.
It's not really.
I think Jason should talk now.
Jason,
go ahead,
what's
Jason
on your agenda?
Well, I've been reading a lot of stuff by Jack Kirby lately, and also a lot of more recent stuff, and I am constantly amazed at how much influence Jack Kirby had on comic creators who are writing comics now, and how much of the stuff that he created is being used. Like, right now, or I just recently read the all four volumes of the Fourth World Omnibus series, which is his New Gods saga for DC with the Forever People and Darkseid and all of those characters. Which Grant Morrison uses a lot in his work. Like, right now, The Final Crisis is all about the, I don't know if it would be called the Fifth World, but basically the New Gods and Darkseid actually winning, taking over the DC Universe, which I've also been reading a lot of Grant Morrison lately, too. Like, I just recently read his JLA run, and he did this entire portion of the JLA series from the, I think it was the late 90s, early 2000s, which almost was kind of like a prelude to Final Crisis. It was an alternate future, and so I'm interested to see how this is going to play out in Final Crisis. But another thing that I'm reading right now is Jack Kirby's Black Panther, which I've been reading the current Black Panther series, and he was in the current Black Panther series, it kind of crossed over with Fantastic Four for a while because Reed and Sue, after Civil War, decided to take a break to work on their marriage, and Storm and Black Panther took their spots in the Fantastic Four. And they had this entire sort of like thing going on with a storyline involving these little brass frogs, King Solomon's frogs, that were kind of like time machines. And they would send people to different times. And that's how they crossed over with the Marvel Zombies. They got the Fantastic Four into the Marvel Zombies universe using these King Solomon's frogs.
So do they jump universes as well?
They must have jumped universes as well. Anyway, you know, I'm like, okay, this is weird. These King Solomon's frogs.
Do you have to lick the frogs?
No, you don't lick the frogs.
Okay.
You just kind of pet the frogs.
You just rub the frogs.
You stroke the frogs.
You don't kiss them?
Anyway, so I'm reading the Black Panther series by Jack Kirby from the 70s. That's where these frogs, these brass frogs, came from. So, you know, whoever was writing this sequence in Fantastic Four.
I think it was Reginald Hudlin.
Was it Reginald Hudlin?
I think so.
Or was it Dwayne McDuffie? I don't know.
That
was
a real name.
I think it was one of those two.
Okay,
what, Dwayne McDuffie?
Poor Dwayne.
It might
have
been.
He's going to be guest of honor at Convergence this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He created Static Shock. Milestone, kind of, anyway.
Okay.
But, so, you know, there's an instance of...
We should read something by him before Convergence. And
like,
podcast about it.
We
like,
could. We
in
could
fact,
do that.
Maybe that should be my selection for the...
Oh.
It was a long time to be now in Convergence.
There's not that. I mean... Okay, 6 months or so.
And it comes up fast.
Exactly. Like, how many months is it going to be before we've all read it and we can have our...
So, anyway, you know, there's one instance of an influence. Another instance is I just read a miniseries called Joker's Last Laugh for DC, which had a character named Shiloh Norman in it. Shiloh Norman is a character that Jack Kirby created as Mr. Miracle's apprentice in the Mr. Miracle series. And he just kind of randomly shows up in this Joker's Last Laugh comic as a as kind of one of the lead characters. And this and then Grant Morrison's Seven Soldiers are the only times I have seen the Shiloh Norman character as Mr. Miracle. Except he wasn't Mr. Miracle in the Joker's Last Laugh. It was Mr. Miracle and the other one. Anyway.
Was he in the Joker's Last Laugh?
He was just Shiloh Norman. He said that he used to be Mr. Miracle. He used to be the original Mr. Miracle's apprentice, and then he was Mr. Miracle for a while, but now he's retired. And so he was kind of a non-powered superhero, although he had a mother box. And you probably don't
What's
know what a mother box is. Yeah, you don't know what a mother box is.
Explain a mother box. What's a mother box?
A mother box is something that that Mr. Miracle had and various members of the New Gods had, like Orion had one. It's like a sentient computer that helps them do things like generate a boom tube. You don't know what a boom tube is, do you?
It's just opening a wormhole.
Yeah, it is. Okay, you know what a boom tube is.
Yeah,
so
because that's not original to... whatever fantasy universe that you're talking about.
What have you read Boom Tubes in, out of curiosity?
I've heard the references more than once.
Well, I'm wondering, though, is if...
Which came first?
Yeah, if...
Well,
if,
we could look it up on Wikipedia.
If the origin was, again, with Jack Kirby, just, you know, compounding
what
influence this guy had on comics. I mean, it's crazy. And, I mean, he's really good. This Black Panther series is so completely... off the wall compared to every other appearance I've seen of Black Panther.
Well, the impression I've gotten of like, his stuff is that since he started as an artist and then moving to writing and continuing to draw it, is that he was creating stuff that he just wanted to be able to draw. You know, where so many creators just kind of the conventional, you know, earthbound superhero with their origin story, they become, you know, put on costumes where he would create these like unbelievable new worlds and systems of gods and all sorts of things that he just, you know, wanted to be able to design. A pantheon of gods, that kind of thing.
You know, they've talked about that in some of the introductions to these Fourth World books. The stuff that he really wanted to do, and because of sales and marketing and various things like that, DC wouldn't necessarily let him do it. And he pretty much just kind of went along with it, you know. He had these ideas, but then when he had to change them because DC said, oh, well, we're cutting this series, apparently he never really had this stuff written down ahead of time. It was all in his head. So you don't know, like, if they had just said, you know, Jack, whatever you want to do, just keep doing it until you feel like stopping. Who knows where it could have gone? It was very intricate and worked out. It was getting very intricate as it was going along, but because it was cut short, and then later they said, you know, we want you to do a tie-up, but we can't let you go completely the way you want to go. You have to, you know, fit it within these parameters. And he did. And it was okay. So you kind of get this feeling that he definitely didn't finish it the way he would have finished it if he had unlimited time and resources.
By the way, the Fantastic Four, in which they encounter the Marvel Zombies, was written by Reginald Hudlin.
Okay, all right. Did you look up the origin of Hudlin? H-U-D-L-I-N. Or do you need to know how to spell Reginald?
I could have taken that off.
Did you look up the origin of the word boom tube?
No, I didn't know I was supposed to.
that's your job, Mike, is to look stuff up.
Fact checker.
It's derivative of the words boom and tube.
That's and all you need. Anyway, so
only one or two letters away from
Mark Vanyard was one of Jack Kirby's apprentices, and he just recently wrote this huge tome on Kirby, which I really want to read now that I'm reading all this Kirby stuff, and I think it'll be really interesting.
Really?
I don't know. It'll make me go, God, I wish that, you know, I could read these unwritten stories.
Mm. Well, especially now, if he had been writing in this age where the writers and creators get to, you know, do have that option of going on forever.
Where sometimes you kind of wish that they did have an editor stepping in.
Yeah.
Totally.
Telling them, you know.
It's
market size, or they're like, this is just, you're going on too long, you're, yeah.
Yeah, Warren Ellis, Alan Moore. Yeah.
Sometimes I kind of think that Grant Morrison, who is a huge Kirby fan, you know, uses all of his characters and everything, he could use a little bit more editorial hands-on-ness. Just,
when we saw Warren Ellis speak at Wizard World, where he basically said he has intimidated his editors into hiding, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did you want to know about the boom tube?
The origin,
where the origin
of the term came from.
And was it Kirby?
Well, yeah, it was Kirby for his Fourth World series of comics.
Okay.
Does
it say any other uses of the word boom tube?
Yeah.
In other.
Outside of comic books, boom tubes have been seen on a number of occasions. Well, the Super Friends animated series. The Superpowers Team Galactic Guardians.
Which is all related to
DC stuff. Smallville, yeah. Everything is in terms of.
But like DC Superman stuff.
Yeah,
like,
Superman stuff.
Is that, okay.
They mentioned Grant Morrison's Mr. Miracle run. Nothing outside of DC.
That reminds me, I was reading a short series that Grant Morrison was doing called Aztec. And I've often said that Grant Morrison, it seems like when he writes comics, sometimes he forgets to put all the panels, and occasionally forgets to put a page or two in, that, you know, to really get a full Grant Morrison comic, it's like page inside Grant Morrison's head, next page. Anyway, this Aztec series, I got it as a trade from the library, and I'm reading it. And all of a sudden, it's like, I really felt like there were pages missing. Completely like there were pages missing. And then I started looking at the numbers, I'm like, oh, there was a printing error. I mean, a lot of trades that you get from the library actually do have pages missing because, you know, they're not put together real great and so many people have read them. That's one of the drawbacks of library comics is they're not handled real well. But in this case, it was a printing error by DC.
Yeah, I recently got an issue of Jack of Fables where I had the opposite problem. They kept reprinting the same sequence of pages a couple of times.
Which trade was that?
No, it was an issue.
Oh.
I got, yeah. Where, yeah, like, I would read, like, two things, and then I'm like, this seems familiar. Oh, wait, yeah. And just want to go ahead again.
That's annoying. Do you think there were pages missing?
No, it was repeat pages.
I know,
well, yeah, but in fillings of other pages.
I think they were all there. Just like the first 5% were reprinted 3 times.
Oh my god,
that's like a whole comic.
It really is.
But, so is that a collector's item now?
I do not know. Anybody want to offer me money for it? Just let me know.
Just consider it extra artwork for your buck.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah, you have pages you can take out and put up on your wall now.
That's true.
So I was thinking, and this is unrelated to Jack Kirby or any of the things that we've so far discussed or that Jason has brought up, but I was thinking we should follow up with a little bit on our last podcast, because I know at least two of us have actually read the rest of the series now.
Yeah.
And
I am
totally excited
a lot
now
more now
for the fifth one, because I thought 3 and 4 were way better than 1 and 2.
Well, and you know, that's not uncommon for a comic book writer to improve as they go along.
Well, and as they get out of origin story exposition land and into what the next thing is,
Not uncommon with TV series as well, that the second season is far superior to the first, like Buffy and...
although it can
Star Trek The Next Generation
as well.
Totally unlike movies, in which case the sequel is usually worse than the original.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say Heroes.
Have the, same people.
The second season was way worse.
Well, wasn't that when the writer's strike happened too?
No.
Yeah, but they were off to a bad start from what I understand too. And not that the third season is, from what I hear, have gotten any better either.
It's been really terrible. But anyway, yes, I really enjoyed at least catching up with the current Scott Pilgrim, and I would definitely read the fifth one.
Well, it comes out next month.
Cool.
I think.
Revisit Walking Dead. How many people are caught up with that?
I am.
As many as read it, I think. Three of us.
Yeah.
Three of
us. Just not
me.
I
stopped.
I'm not caught up.
I had to stop. It was too painful.
I'm starting to see how he's going to prolong this book.
Yeah.
Especially with his adamant stance that he's never going to explain what the zombies are all about. That there's no science to them. There's no explanation for
their
motives.
I thought that's where they're going to DC
Well, the characters are, but he, behind the scenes, has said that there's
What?
It's about the characters. It's not about the zombies.
I'm done with Kirkman.
This is what I think he's going to do. He's just going to keep killing off characters, introducing new ones, and keeping the story going that way.
Yes.
It's going to be kind of retelling the stories over and over again.
And, he's going to keep making his point that humans are way worse than any monster in as many different ways as he can get that point across.
I will keep reading until at least 75, because he said there'd be aliens in it.
That's not going to happen.
Will there be ninjas as well?
That or he's going to present a crazy psychotic character who thinks they're an alien.
Maybe robots. Maybe he could put robots in.
Or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Zombie Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Unicorns.
Zombie unicorns.
Aren't all zombies?
I don't know.
Like, unicorn zombies.
Would it be better with zombie unicorns?
It would be.
You know, I'll bet no one has done zombie unicorns. We may be the first ones.
Oh, God.
Why? We should start a zombie unicorn comic.
No!
Trademark!
There was a, on the Dr. Horrible DVD, there was
Virgin Brains.
A feature in which people submitted applications to the Evil League of Evil with them in a supervillain role. And there was the zombie princess.
Yep.
She sang a song.
She did. It was cute. I wanted her to bite me.
The best one was the puppet one of the preacher.
There was a Swedish puppet who is a preacher. Yeah.
And he did this big rap kind of pick up.
It was awesome.
It was very funny.
Did he cook as well?
Nobody spoke in tongues. That was funny.
Yeah, really? Is it all
It wasn't. It didn't sound Swedish.
No,
but it
didn't.
Bork, bork, bork. It wasn't the Swedish chef. Or the Swedish priest.
Maybe there should be a zombie Swedish chef.
There are some weird smells coming from the kitchen, by the way.
Yes, Mike and I are making friendship bread right now.
That is not ironically named friendship.
Right now our friendship stinks.
Should we pause the
no,
podcast?
No, because how much time is there?
I think there's like 10 more minutes.
I'm going to pause.
Can somebody start talking?
Yeah, good job, Mike.
Oh, thanks.
And we're back.
Okay, so I was going to tell a brief cooking story. No,
he can't.
Do
it's
it.
Not COVID related. You son of a bitch.
It's basically how he reacted to us talking about bread.
I sometimes make a Christmas cookie Spider-Man. That's cooking related and cooking related.
That's not a funny story.
We can totally do a comic book related cooking story. Totally, totally. Marty and Florence recently made Christmas cookies. And they made, you know, all kinds of different designs. Marty said to me,
I couldn't remember the name of it.
He said he made a Beyonder cookie. And he was trying to find it, and he was showing me pictures that he took of all of his cookies, and he made some iPod cookies and various things. And finally, he showed me the Beyonder cookie.
It was David Hasselhoff.
Kind of like a star with an eye in the middle. And I'm like, oh. I'm like, I didn't think you would even.
Monster.
Well, I said, I didn't think you had even read Secret Wars. And he's like, wait. Maybe I'm using the wrong word. And I'm like, oh, a Beholder from Dungeons & Dragons. He's like, yeah, that's it. And then I showed him a picture of the Beyonder from Secret Wars 2 with his, you know, Jerry Curl and white jumpsuit. And I'm like, I totally was like, why would he have made a cookie shaped like a guy with a white guy in a white jumpsuit with a Jerry Curl?
Trivia question. Who did the Beyonder base his body upon?
I don't know.
In America.
There is a DC character that's like part squid, part starfish.
Starro?
Starfish?
Yeah, but you're talking about Starro the Conqueror?
I guess so.
Yes.
Very menacing.
He's, well, he was the character that, that was the origin of, or no, that wasn't the origin of the JLA, but that was the first JLA story, was them battling Starro. Hmm.
Well, that makes me think of Rigel. from Farscape. there's actually a Farscape comic that I got this week.
Yeah.
Did you get it?
I got it.
Oh. Okay, both of us probably didn't need to get it. I should have told you. But anyway, it picks up where the show left off, like where the miniseries that ended the show left off. And
who writes it? Rockney.
D. Candido and Rodney O'Bannon.
Rodney O'Bannon, who actually originated the series. So, I mean, it definitely seems to be part canon and keeping the spirit of the show. I'm not sure I like it, you know, as much as the show, but it was certainly interesting, made me laugh, and was a plausible continuation of their story.
It's funny. I mean, how many other, like, long-running TV shows have comic book, finishing, you know, just picking up where they left off? You know, I mean, I know there are other comic book
adaptations,
but how many, like, really continue after the series?
Actually, you know, there have been a number that have kind of carried on when there was a break. With original stories. Star Wars.
Sure.
I mean, the whole Marvel run was considered to be a continuation, although it went a little crazy.
And
now
it's considered
not considered
as
canon at all.
Was it considered canon at the time?
I think, well, as much as anybody thought there was
canon
ever going to be
really
other,
a commonly used term back then.
Yeah. The Doctor Who comics, that carried on continued after the series.
Transformers and G.I. Joe cartoons had comic book adaptations, as did Muppet Babies.
And Ewoks.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
I've heard that Pushing Daisies will end in a comic, since they were not allowed to film any kind of closure for the season.
I kept hearing that that there was going to be a Veronica Mars comic.
Yeah.
But
what TV shows or movies do you think should be a comic book?
Well, I was basically just going to say that now I think, like, every series that Florence has on DVD has now been made into a comic.
Yeah.
I think...
I was just thinking, like, how sad it is that everything I love is not the cultural zeitgeist. It's, like, the opposite, because it just ends, and there's no more of it. I very, very rarely end up, like, in on the cultural zeitgeist. It's kind of annoying, being so unique.
Well, you're clearly above the common denominator.
There are kind of like junior manga continuations of both Labyrinth and Dark Crystal.
What? Really?
Oh, that's not what I want.
Well, they're going to be a sequel to the Dark Crystal.
Yeah, I don't want that either.
I'm scared.
That isn't entirely all CGI. A lot
really?
Of it is puppet.
Really?
With CGI effects.
That's what I've heard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So we were misled.
It's designed by Brian Froud, and it's not a direct sequel, but it is a sequel. It's like takes place 100 years later or so.
Huh.
So another movie set in that world.
Yeah.
Post.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
So it's kind of told in real time.
I mean, Frank Oz could direct, I suppose, but it just, I have a feeling it's going to not.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's,
yeah, we'll see. I'll be interested in seeing
it. It's definitely formative and truly just beautiful and scary. And
I was going to actually say, if there is a Veronica Mars comic series, you know who I would choose to write it?
Hmm.
Brubaker and Rucka. Ed Brubaker and Greg Rucka. Because they do crime comics, crime and detective comics, so very well.
Like, what?
Gotham Central.
Mm.
I really like that one, yeah.
Me too.
The latest Daredevil comics.
Oh, I haven't read those.
Oh my god.
I need to get into
most
Daredevil.
Recent run of Daredevil since Bendis left, I think is actually the stuff that took place after Bendis, I'm enjoying more. Because it's focusing a lot on the kind of crime and detective aspect of the Daredevil series. What else? You know, and Brubaker was also doing Uncanny X-Men. And it's like...
He still is.
I thought he left. I thought Fraction.
Oh, you're right. You're right. He did.
Took it over.
They kind of did the same thing they did with Immortal Iron Fist for a while, where they both co-wrote it and then one took over.
Because, you know, Brubaker on Daredevil, awesome. Brubaker on X-Men,
you know, for... Until they did the whole big crossover last year with the baby mutant, I can't remember what they called it, but
the
Messiah Complex. You know, leading up to that...
Susie, were you saying something?
Oh, I was just trying to remember what that was called.
Oh.
Yeah, Messiah Complex, Jason remembered. But the stuff in Uncanny X-Men and in... the adjectiveless X-Men at the time, now it's called X-Men Legacy, which was written by Mike Carey. Those are pretty good. But since the Messiah Complex, yeah, they've definitely taken a turn.
You're saying the San Francisco just isn't grabbing you?
Not what they've done since. Not really what they've done with it.
Well, I haven't read... I've only been reading the trades, so I'm not caught up at all. It looks like Florence is itching to talk about the comics she has on her lap.
Well, I'm trying to think of what I want to say about them. I've been reading a bunch of comics since we got back from Mexico and caught up on our pull. And this last week was a surprisingly big stack, and we've been trying to make it through amidst all of the other errands of being home again and having to work and shit. But
life must be tough.
Yeah. So we've got the latest Sandman, Dream Hunters, Sword, No Hero, The Authority, and Buffy. And
I kind of, I'm interested in reading, catching up with the Buffy.
Yeah.
Because I have to say, I've really always loved Harmony. I mean, she's just, when she became a vampire, it just made her so much better.
It's true. She's a very interesting character.
You maybe, well, no, you've seen the first season of Buffy now, haven't you?
No.
Oh.
Should I?
She was a Disney. Harmony is what Buffy would be if she wasn't a Slayer. Susie, go ahead. What were you saying, Susie?
There was a character called Cordelia who was basically the school. Harmony was basically one of her lackeys. Very little substance, very vague and dumb. and, you know, happy to be
typical cheerleader
in latchkeys with me. And then at the end of the third season, when Belle graduated from high school, she got eaten by a vampire, became a vampire. Next time we saw her, she was dating Spike.
Yeah.
And
annoying the crap out of Spike, too.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She was a big time out for him.
Well, she was like a Buffy substitute.
But before he knew that he wanted Buffy.
Yeah.
You know
a subconscious Buffy substitute.
You know what TV show would make a good comic series?
Mm-hmm.
This just popped in my mind for some reason. Kind of in... You know how The Wizard of Oz, or The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, was later written, there were subsequent novels written about them that were all very much darker and weird?
Well, the original was a lot more weird than the movie.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah,
right.
Go ahead.
But, this is kind of funny. In that same vein, a comic book adaptation of The Land of Make-Believe from Mr. Rogers... in which all the characters are all twisted and dark and everything.
So kind of like that comic I was telling you guys about that I heard from the Comic Book Queers guys about the breakfast cereal characters.
I don't remember if you told me about
that. Oh, maybe you weren't here. Maybe I just told Marty and Florence. I forget what it's called, but it's a free webcomic series about breakfast cereal characters. Two factions led, the good ones led by Captain Crunch, and the bad ones led by Count Chocula.
Oh, yes, yes, you did tell me about that.
Yeah.
I think I was out of the room.
I think the Land of
Make-Believe,
you got this lush fantasy land with odd characters.
Oh, see, I totally thought you were going to say you got this lush named Lady Elaine Fairchild.
Well, yeah, she is kind of a lush. I always thought she was I always thought she was a witch of some sort, and I think there's a lot to explore in the relationship between Henrietta Pussycat and X the Owl. Meow, 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 Pussycat.
Oh, the
meow,
owl
meow.
And the Pussycat. I didn't even catch that.
Huh. What's that?
The Owl and the Pussycat. It was a poem.
Oh.
And they lived in the same tree, didn't they? Why are we talking about...
Daniel Tiger and his clock.
But yeah.
And the purple panda, don't forget him.
Wow. Did Fred Rogers do more drugs than anybody thought?
You know,
I don't think they can hear you. Speak up.
That was filmed.
I can barely hear you guys at this point.
Oh, I was just saying, did Fred Rogers do more drugs than anybody thought? And
oh,
Florence totally. Was going to respond to that.
Well, that was filmed in Pittsburgh, where I went to college, and actually quite a few people I knew interned at Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, and just... Everyone who ever knew him up close said the most glowing, wonderful things about Fred Rogers.
That's
just,
everything that I heard.
Like,
he is... if anyone is going to...
He's a saint.
...going to be considered a saint in the U.S., it's him.
Yeah, basically, you know, there's... It's easy to be suspicious of a seemingly nice man who, you know, works with kids or devotes his life to children's education, but apparently he is the real deal. Just a really good man who had some really innovative ideas about helping kids' self-esteem and stuff.
I always thought that The Land of Make-Believe was a really cool segment of the show when I was a kid and watched it.
Oh, yeah,
and I loved those toys that
he
had.
When
he
brought out
toys.
The toys, yeah. I was always kind of upset when he would visit The Land of Make-Believe just through the tunnel instead of taking out the tree and the platypus
when he sent the trolley instead of bringing the stuff out.
Yep.
Oh, see, all I remember is the trolley. I don't remember any kind of
interaction
with him.
Very deluxe
little
toys.
Miniature.
It was almost the castle,
like playsets. The
castle with the trolley wall in front of it.
And the tree.
The tree. And
the clock.
And the clock. And I think they had Lady Elaine's little fortress, too.
Yes.
Whatever she had. I wonder what the hell
the
was
platypus
deal
thing
with.
Too is like very distinctive memory for me.
Or
like
Anatinus.
Oh yeah, there was a platypus
family. What?
There was a platypus family.
Yes, yes.
Later, yeah.
Yep, they actually had the baby platypus during the show, I think.
Yeah, there was kind of like a different district of the make believe place because they didn't always go there.
Yeah.
It was like farther south or something.
I distinctly remember, like, there was a whole part that he had to, like, go through another room or something to get there.
Yeah, kind of. I vaguely remember that, too.
I really don't.
Huh.
So this comic, there'd be actually like zombie platypus eye.
And Lady Elaine Fairchild would be the overlord of all the evil forces.
I think I'm against this now. I think it's treading on.
I don't think they need to be zombies. They just need to be mutant platypus. Which platypus are kind of mutants anyway. Yeah. I mean, they're mammals that lay eggs. You don't get more mutated than that.
Documentary about them, and they are really weird and cool.
And
really
venomous.
Really weird.
What?
Yeah, platypuses are venomous. They have venom on these barbs on their like knees or elbows.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, they have poisonous knees. They lay eggs. They have a duck bill and a beaver tail. What else?
Oh, there's a t-shirt design that is related to that, with this plus this plus this equals platypus.
And I think one of the cool things over that I didn't know was, I don't know if it's true of the platypus or it's true of like the Akiva, which is their cousin, is that when they give milk, they don't have nipples. The milk just comes out through their skin.
Yep, I've heard that too. I had to study a little bit that animal when I was in college.
There was a, to bring this back to comic book characters, there was a gangster in some comic series called The Platypus, what was it? Was it?
And he expressed milk through his skin.
What series was that, that he hired someone, I can't remember now, I'll have to look it up. But, he was kind of a cool gangster, the platypus. He was trying to take over, there was a crime land, a vacuum, and he was trying to move in to stake his claim on the fact that, you know, some crime lord was gone, it was dead, and he was gonna move in and take control, and it all backfired, and he was killed.
It's terrible.
Long live the platypus!
I could talk about what I've been reading.
Yeah, go ahead. Go for it, Susan.
Okay.
this podcast is taking a weird turn.
Life Sucks by Jessica Abel Other people.
Volume 2?
No, just volume 1. I don't know if there is a volume.
No, there is only one volume. Did I lend that to you guys and you read it?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
You know what? And we never did post a review of it.
I don't think we ever did, no.
Because
I was saying
I was going to write one. Susie, you could do it.
Okay.
Post about it.
I read that and I really liked it, and I liked how it skewered like the current view of vampires being very romantic, and I liked that a lot because this was basically vampires who become slaves for older vampires and have to work in convenience stores.
Yep. Yep.
To their own, and one of them falls in love with a goth girl who's totally into the whole romantic idea of vampirism, and it's very cool. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I think all of us except for Mike have read it.
What comic is this again?
Life Sucks by Jessica Abel.
Oh. I'm looking up the Land of Make-Believe on Google.
And I've also been reading a webcomic called Anders Loves Maria. I've made it all the way through the archives now, and I'm up to the recent ones. I really like it. It's also not safe for work at all.
What's it called?
now you're interested. Anders Loves Maria.
Anders Loves Maria.
Yeah. And Anders is an asshole. just so you know that. But it's a great comic. It's done by a Swedish woman. I think she writes everything in Swedish and then has to translate it into English. And the art is very, very simplistic. And the funny thing is, it's totally not safe for work, and yet it's such like not realistic looking art at all. But it's just so explicit. It's really kind of funny that way.
Huh.
But it's really very cool-looking stuff, too. And it's just very involving for me. I really liked it. And it's just about this relationship between Anders and Maria. And not much has happened through, like, so a lot has, but not that much through, like, I think they're up to 200 editions now, so it's good, though. I like it.
So it's kind of like a lot of the relationship manga in that it nothing happens ever. It, like, you know, all these adventures happen, but the relationships never really seem to change. Like,
yeah,
Ranma one half and Oh My Goddess, and I don't know if
I
you've
read any of those, so
half.
I don't really know how.
I watched the anime for that. That's some twisted
how
stuff.
Well, that's. I mean, stuff has happened in their relationship.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
I'll find a link and post it.
I read something Martian sent me, Pax Romana.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was a really cool concept, and I thought the art was very cool, but there were times I was just like, just stop talking about what you're going to do and then do it.
I so agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
because
a nightly news
guy,
right?
Like, they got to what they were going to do, the exact opposite of what they said where they were going to do happened, which was kind of cool, but... Still, it was just so much concept and so little action that I got kind of a rhetoric, I guess is the better word for it, that, yeah, they got a little tiresome.
I totally agree,
it was
yeah.
a really cool concept.
Yeah. And I really just see what they're going to do with it, but yeah, it was very wordy setup.
Is it still going on, or is it done?
I thought it was done. Is it done, Susie?
I think it's going on, yeah.
Hmm.
It didn't feel done in my memory.
Plot is done. But I think he had a lot more plans, like, of stories to tell in that universe that's still going on.
Right. So my understanding is that that he only planned 4 issues. Those 4 issues are done, but probably he wants to continue it. I mean, my guess...
I know I saw it, like, in my comic book shop recently. I don't know if what I saw was one of those issues, though.
I'm pretty sure it had to have been, because I know there's not anything else out.
Okay.
So it could be ongoing and he's taking a break.
Whatever. I don't know. He's got like 1,000 series going right now. Well,
yeah,
like
that's
3.
What it seemed like every time I went to the letter from the editor or writer, as the case may be, it was like, and I'm doing this and I'm starting this and this one's going to happen in a month. But yeah.
What else is he doing?
Red Mars, is it called? No.
Oh.
No, that's not right. What's it called, Mike?
Red Mask for Mars?
Red Mask for Mars.
Which is pretty interesting. I've only seen the 2 issues come out so far for it, though.
Yeah, I think there's only 2 of that so far, and then he just wrapped up the 4th issue, and I might be getting these confused. Maybe Pax Romana isn't done, but we did just wrap up Transhuman, or maybe Transhumanism, I don't remember which one it's called, but that was basically about these 2 rival companies. One was... augmenting humanity via mechanical means, as one was augmenting humanity through, you know, biotechnology, genetics, that kind of thing. And essentially, which one won, and kind of the rivalry that had been really, like, very personal. But it was set as, like, a documentary about them both. Like, that was the premise. And, I don't know, there were some aspects that were good, but overall it kind of fell flat for me.
Hmm. Well, maybe
and that one wasn't drawn by him, which was kind of disappointing because I think that's one of the coolest things about.
I kind of hold to my theory that he doesn't draw so much as he designs.
Totally.
Yeah,
right.
it's not
very
a
conceptual.
It's graphic design.
Yeah. Well, which is
but
it's still drawn.
Valid. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
he's incredibly talented. Yeah, it's just not very conventional.
Not, like, illustrations.
Right. And it's interesting because I think Pax Romana really does have a lot of, like, faces and stuff in it, more so than...
Nightly News?
Well, maybe not more than Nightly News, but better than Nightly News. I think they're drawn well.
Yeah.
And...
I'll have to...
But yeah, really lacks in action. Like, there's just not...
I'll have to look for them at the library. To see if...
Oh,
I mean, I assume that they'll start coming out in trade and stuff.
I went and reread my... the first trade of Astro City. And I hadn't read it in, like, 10 years or so. It was really cool because I just got to, like... it's so clear how well thought out this universe of Asteroid City is, and like in Kirby's Eric's brain and then the artist's brain, because there's all these little seeds that you pick up on in like the first 5 issues that, you know, we're maybe 40, 50 issues later, I don't know how many now, have like some are yet to be used and some have been used, and I just like I really hope that they, as you know, as hard a time as they have been getting them out, I really hope that they just keep on going despite all that. Because I really, really want to see, like, kind of see all those little scenes come to fruition.
Astro City is, like, I think probably the best comic I've ever read. Like, just overall comic book series.
I think it is my favorite superhero series by far.
What would you say is better that's not a superhero series?
I really love Sandman. I really love Strangers in Paradise. But Astro City is right up there with them. I feel way more personally connected to something like Strangers in Paradise. It hit me on a really, like, emotional level. And then Sandman hit me on a really, like, imagination level. I don't know.
I think that's where you start getting into that comics are the medium, and then we're talking about different genres. Because it's hard to really compare Sandman, Astro City, and Strangers in Paradise other than the format.
Yeah.
I mean, the stories are so complete. I mean, you're basically comparing, at that point, you're comparing...
Gone with the Wind to...
Harry Potter.
Yeah.
War and Peace...
I think you're totally true. You just, you know, you John asked Adams. What was above Astro City, and those are.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to know.
You know, Susie, I think that I agree with that. I mean, I tend to rate books higher if I feel a personal connection with them, even if I don't necessarily think they're more ambitious in terms of art. And I think Astro City is really easy to admire, but I haven't connected with it on that level.
I can see that. And again, with a lot of series where there's massive delays, it's hard to keep your interest. It's like, oh, a new Astro City is out. Great. And you'll read it, and you'll be like, oh, that was awesome. And now I just have to wait 6-7 months for the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But well, despite all that, I really hope they keep on doing it. I hope they don't be like, well, you know, it's getting ridiculous. We can't keep doing this. I hope they keep on going.
I agree.
Because I really want to see everything. I want to read all the stories they want to tell.
Yeah. Me too.
I'd like to take a moment to say that I managed to get the bread out of the oven before the timer started beeping. So...
Good.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well done.
So we saved our listeners from hearing the oven beep, and now instead they have to listen to us talk about baking bread.
Well, only for that moment, but you prolonged it. What is our next book club, Marty?
Well, I don't know.
Mike. Don't you think you should have decided by now? It's been like 2 weeks.
Well, I've got an idea, actually.
What's the idea? Just say it.
I like your idea.
The quicker you just get it out there, then we can do it and get the next one, then it'll come back to you the next one.
Well, what was his name again?
Dwayne McDuffie.
Dwayne McDuffie?
Yeah.
What has he written?
Well, he wrote a series of Fantastic Four. He wrote Static Shock.
What is this Static Shock?
It was a milestone comic that was an imprint of DC, which was very heavily... marketed as being by and for African-American creators and writers.
I remember that.
And Static Shock was the only one that really kind of, I think, took off from it.
They were all pretty short-lived, though.
Yeah, Static Shock actually even became a comic cartoon series for a while. And there were some crossovers with the other DC characters. What else has he done? Those are the only two that I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you had an idea.
Yeah, I liked your other idea. We have till July. So.
Yeah, okay. Well, my other idea was just to read the first trade or more, if you want, of PS 238.
Oh, yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Who writes that?
Okay.
It is
certainly like all of them. I will be. We were very easy for me to do that. So.
Yeah, we have all of them, or we have up to the latest trade, which I think is 5, the 5th one, maybe?
Mm-hmm, just came out.
Just came out, and yeah, they are so good.
Who writes them?
I forget the guy's name. It's the same guy that did the Nodwick Chronicles.
We will post it when we announce next book club. But by all accounts, he's a really nice guy, so.
Yeah,
maybe he'll come over.
He's involved with the people, like... there's a kind of a group of people that do webcomics, him and Scott Kurtz who does PvP, and they're all part of a sub community in webcomics.
Yeah, it's weird because his webcomics are like the technology behind them. It's just really sad.
Really?
Yeah. Like I can hardly stand to read them online.
The websites are not navigatable and stuff.
Well, and it's like, somehow they're like affiliated with like GameTap or GameSpy or some big website.
Yeah.
I'm forgetting which one now. And like it's just full of ads. No, it's like a game related website.
Huh.
It's not a comic website.
Huh.
Well, maybe they're full of ads because he's trying to make a living.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I mean...
I think it's interesting, though, that... I mean, my understanding was that he was kind of known for these other comics. He does Full Frontal Nerdery, and...
that's why it looks so familiar.
In
the artwork, I mean.
Right.
I read that one.
But it now seems like PS238 is actually coming out more regularly than these other comics. The Nodwick Chronicles may not even be... He may not even be doing it anymore. I'm not sure.
Well, with that, do you think we should maybe wrap up for tonight?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Bye.
This is us signing off.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. See you. Bye.
Boomerang, tumerang, zoomerang.